I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective.
These are the kind of guys you like to smack in the ass.
Hey everybody, James Bostic here, a conservative's perspective on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, Mojo50.com, of course. If you aren't listening, you should be. You know this, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Mojo50.com. Well, beginning there, the leadoff clip, old Yeller whispering kind of this at this point, Joe Biden talking about how he wants to smack Donald Trump on the ass because, you know what, I don't even know why, man, I'll be honest with you. I know what he says here about why he wants to smack him on the ass, but I don't believe that's really the true reason with him. We're not going to go any further than that. Hey, I got a quick question. By show of hands, even though I know it's radio, and unless your hands are otherwise occupied or you're driving or, you know, something like that, don't obviously. But are you guys tired of this shit? I just realized that's probably a lot of what's wrong with me here over the last few weeks. I'm tired of it. Actually, I was tired of it 12 years ago. You know, when Barack Obama had his two terms, I was pretty worn out by it. But then we had a little reprieve there with Donald Trump and a ray of sunshine on our lives collectively. And then we got this idiot. And I'm tired, man. I am ready. And, you know, we got a couple more days. That's all we got. But a couple more days. This Tuesday, rather, will, one way or another, tell us the direction we're going. I am optimistic. But at the same time, I'm not overly hopeful, knowing what happened last time. Again, you know, we've talked about this a lot. It's going to have to be a victory of such a landslide, a flash flood of voters to preclude cheating to any real level that would sway this thing one way or another. That's the only way. And there are some things I'm gonna talk to you about. I found this on Conservative Treehouse with Sundance there. And let me just lay this on you. But and we'll get to this here in a minute. This will give us, I find it encouraging. But I'm also a bit of a cynic when it comes to this, and I remember what happened 4 years ago. So don't rule out that they can't do it, all right? Don't rule that out. But aren't you guys tired of it? I ran into an old friend of mine, a very dear friend, actually, from high school. Grocery shopping yesterday morning, and we visit the same grocery store at about the same time. By the way, Food Lion is awesome. I just want to tell you guys, I know they're Kroger's and they're Publix people. And, you know, they got their Publix is nice, too. I really do like them. Have a Kroger close to me. And anyway, back to Food Lion. That's my habit. Saturday mornings, I go work out with my brother Bernie over on that side of town. When we're done, it's about 2 minutes away. So I stop at Food Lion, get everything I need for the week, and then hi, go on back home. But anyway, I got up this morning and I thought to myself, because I was thinking about, you know, what am I going to do on the show? Try and get a framework of what's going to happen here as this hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is, unfolds. And I just thought about it, and I'm looking through, finding my show prep, and apparently Kamala Harris is giving up. She never really went out into the hinterlands to try and sell her campaign or her candidacy at any level. It's always been softball interviews, and even the interviews that weren't, well, actually it's been T-ball interviews. Okay, it's been T-ball interviews, and the two softball interviews that she had, one with Brett Baer and the other one with Anderson Cooper, I think. You know, she just screwed the moose on it. So she's abandoned it. She pulled back earlier this week. They had like a couple million dollar, about $2-3 million ad blitz that they had planned to run in North Carolina. Well, they gave up on that. They're not going to do that. She was supposed to have been in a rally, I think, sometime yesterday in Detroit or somewhere in Michigan. And she said, nah, forget that. We're not going to do that either. And she went to New York, and she did this Saturday Night Live thing. I've watched it. Yeah. The buzzword they use on most of this stuff she's doing these days and her surrogates is cringeworthy. And, yeah, it's pretty cringeworthy. I'll leave it to you to check that out. But so she's done these lousy interviews, and she did this SNL thing, and she did that thing at the Alfred Smith dinner a couple of weeks back, which was another worn-out, likewise seeking relevancy television personality. What's her name? She did she had like a Catholic schoolgirl character that she did that, like a lot of people, and there was a generation of SNL players that parlayed one of their characters, you know, into movies. Wayne and Garth, good example. The Ladies Man, Tim Meadows did one. Everybody did them. So it was from back about 30 years ago. So they do this thing, and it's really basically an insult to all Catholics all over the world, although I don't think that's what they meant it to be. I think they meant it to be hip and trendy, and, you know, that's what hip and trendy people do, is they skewer the establishment, and that's how she's trying to come off. Well, anyway, it blew up. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. And so now they do this thing last night, and I'm looking at Breitbart, and the headline is Election Interference. NBC violated the Federal Communication Commission's equal time rule by inviting Vice President Kamala Harris on Saturday Night Live on the last weekend before the election and leaving no time, that's right, leaving no time for former President Donald Trump. Harris appeared in the show's opening scene known as the Cold Open opposite Maya Rudolph, who impersonates her on the program. And what they did here, and it's kind of plagiarized. It wasn't even original. It was a copy of an appearance. It was a ripoff of an appearance that Donald Trump made in 2015 on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. NBC previously had said, hey, you know what? We are not going to invite either candidate on our program. But then they did this. So the rule is clear, and this is from the FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr, Trump appointee, whose appointment was renewed by Joe Biden. He posted on X that NBC had violated the equal time rule. The rule applies, and this is how it works. The rule applies to broadcast radio and television, which utilize public airwaves and therefore come under the authority of the FCC in terms of licensing. Here's what it says. FCC rules seek to ensure that no legally qualified candidate for office is unfairly given less access to the airwaves outside of bona fide news exemptions than their opponent. Equal opportunities generally means providing comparable time and placement to opposing candidates. It does not require a station to provide opposing candidates with programs identical to the initiating candidate. In other words, they can give them equal time. Some guy gets, you know, time on one show, then the network has an opportunity to give equal time on some other program. Doesn't necessarily have to be Saturday Night Live. It could be the Tonight Show. It could be a news program. Doesn't matter. But there wasn't any time left for Donald Trump to appear on SNL. So that's the FCC. Now, I don't know what's going to happen here, if there's going to be like a fine. Nobody's going to go to jail. Nobody's going to have to write sentences or anything like that. They're just going to have to maybe pay some money. Maybe. Because this guy was a Trump appointee. However, being reappointed by Biden should, you know, kind of balance that out, because they would say, oh, well, obviously they're gonna crack down on SNL because it's a Trump appointee. Bullshit. Okay, that's a good example of the political mirroring that we've been undergoing for God knows how long. On an individual basis, psychologists call it projection, which means you attribute those qualities in yourself that perhaps subconsciously you find distasteful or flaws, and you put them on another person. When it's done on an organizational level, when it's done on this level, it's called political mirroring. And it's an Alinsky thing. You accuse your opponent of that which you do while you're doing it. And I think also this speaks volumes to the hypocrisy of a lot of people on the left. I mean, we're all hypocrites on certain things. I mean, certain levels. You know, we all say, you know, oh, God, litter's bad. You shouldn't do that. And then, you know, you drop a receipt in the parking lot. I've done it. Because I've got like 50,000 receipts in my car, and I hate them. I can't get rid of them. It's like I can only get rid of them after like 20 or 30. You know, the drive-through, something you get at the store. They don't put the receipt in your bag anymore. They hand it to you. And so then you put it in your pocket, and then you take it out of your pocket, and you throw it in the console. It's just ridiculous, damn it. Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, hypocrisy. Lorne Michaels, the dude behind Saturday Night Live. Says he hadn't reached out to the real life candidates, and he didn't intend to before the 2024 election. He said you can't bring the actual people who are running on because of election laws and equal time provisions. He knew it going into it. Now we're not going to do that, and here's why we're not going to do that. And then what did they do? They freaking ass turned around and did it. So, absolutely. You know, I'm going to sit here and just hit the pause button for a minute or two, because you'll think I've gone off the air if I don't. So hang on just a second. And I think to a certain extent, it also speaks to the arrogance of these people. Okay, so they knew. Lorne Michaels knew that they were going to be, you know, out of compliance. They're going to be in violation of FCC rules. They don't give a shit. They don't care. It's done. It's out there. They're not going to go to jail. Like I said, they might spend a little bit of money, but Lorne Michaels has got a little bit of money. So, you know, and it makes them look as though they're still anti-establishment. The show's been on for 50 years. Okay, it is the establishment, but they don't want to be seen that way. They want to be seen as bohemian and avant-garde and just flying in the face of traditionalism. It is the tradition. They are the establishment. But they're not happy with that. They need more relevancy than they've had in the last 20 years. So they do things like this. Arrogance, hypocrisy. No bounds. No bounds whatsoever. You know, I just realized we started out with this.
These are the kind of guys you like to smack in the ass.
Anyway, let's get back to grab the ass smacking Joe. Now I'm probably grab ass and Joe, sniff ass and Joe. You know, it's hard to tell that dude. Anyway, so he's in Scranton. He's playing Scranton. Okay, he's in his hometown. The sitting president of the United States, ass smacking Joe Biden, is in his hometown at a campaign event. All right, he's. I think he just decided to go there, and I think that there wasn't anything that the Harris people could do to stop him. It's his hometown, and he's been wanting to be on the campaign trail with her, and her campaign people keep telling him, "Yeah, no, we'll be in touch. We're gonna save the very best for last, Joe. So that's why you're not out there. We're saving the very best for last, and you know we'll be in touch soon because we're you know just a few days left. Well." Yesterday, Joe's in town. He's in his hometown, Scranton, Pennsylvania. The President of the United States, again, Joe smack-ass Biden, is in his hometown doing a campaign event. He's out there pitching for Kamala. Lion Kamala. 100 people, maybe. That's the count. That was the house that he played to. 100 people. And in these remarks, you know, he says he wants to smack Trump's ass. I just want to smack his ass, man. And this is CNN's count. This wasn't a large crowd, maybe 100 people or so. CNN's Vincent Galco. I don't even know. Some dude at CNN reported on the event. We have not seen a lot of President Biden on the campaign trail. And apparently, I think we're seeing why. No, that's me saying that. We haven't seen a lot of President Biden on the campaign trail this year. In his remarks today, you really did get a sense of the stakes that he sees. Of the importance of this election, but also his visceral distaste for Donald Trump. No, I think in Joe's book, I think he's warming up to him is really what's happening. He got worked up at one point talking about how Trump wanted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, wanted to cut taxes for the wealthy, and said, these are the kind of guys you want to smack on the ass. Maybe just let your hand linger a little bit and kind of give that buttocks cheek a quick squeeze before you pull it away. I mean, it's just... Holy Jesus. No, you know what? Not holy Jesus. Jesus wept. Jesus wept. So... Here's another thing I'm going to toss out at you. This is, you know, because we kind of get weedy here periodically. So let's just go off into some what-if weeds. We all know Joe is cognitively inclined, that he fades in and out of lucidity. Now, I'm sure that as those moments have become fewer and fewer, he still possesses them to where he's oriented, to where he knows what's going on, he knows who he is, he knows where he's at. But, you know, those sort of things. In the nursing home business, we would call that oriented times three, which means you're aware of the date, the time of day, and the place. So, you know, it's October, November 2nd, and it's sometime in the afternoon on a Sunday, and I'm here in the Mountain State doing my thing. That's what that means. And I'm sure he has those moments. And in those moments, I'm sure he has further moments of recollection of how they railroaded his ass out of the election, out of the nomination. The incumbent president. Now, we're not talking like LBJ seeing the writing on the wall in terms of America's involvement in Vietnam and their policies towards it, where he said, yeah, they're going to kill me. I'm going to get out of this. I'm not going to seek election, re-election. Joe knows what happened to him. It wasn't Joe's idea, even though they try and paint it to look like it was Joe's idea. It wasn't. Nothing close to it. I think he's mad. And I think some of these things he says, he's either saying intentionally or, excuse me, it's happening because he's not in moments of lucidity, or he's transitioning between lucid moments and going off into whatever time and place he's occupying when he's not here with us. It doesn't help. I don't think he's done anything that could be viewed as a positive. Beyond his endorsing her as his replacement, which is not what the Democrats wanted. I think that was his first act. He knew by doing that, then people are going to get mad. They can't get rid of the woman. They can't get rid of the black woman. Well, the recently turned black woman. I mean, she was an Indian Jamaican woman up to this time. But then all of a sudden, she became black. So now she's black, and we can't get rid of the black woman. Can't get rid of the woman, but you damn sure can't get rid of the black woman. And I never understood that, because I felt she would be just as malleable in terms of the swamp and what they wanted done, Barack Obama, I mean, look at, basically she has prostituted herself in one way or another all the way to the vice presidency. Why would she not do the same to ascend to the presidency? She would do whatever these guys tell her to do. But they didn't want her. They wanted someone else, because they also knew that as flexible and as agreeable and as corrupt and easily influenced that she would be in terms of their need for a rubber stamp like Joe, she was probably the only politician that was disliked more than Joe. So I think he kind of queered their pitch in that respect. And then some of the stuff that he says, and he said, she's been, you know, we're lockstep on everything. She was there and agreed with everything that we did. She's responsible for a lot of what we did. And seeing that it got, you know, it got through. And she signed the bill on the, she was the tie-breaking vote on the screw the American people's life up even more economically bill that they recently passed. And that's how it's been for the last 2 weeks. The Biden Walls campaign, you know, basically has been blindfolded and placed in a room full of upturned rakes. And it's like everywhere they step, pow-pow, pow-pow, pow-pow. And they're trying to navigate the room, and it's just not possible. It's the most, and I don't mean this in a compliment, even though I'm a big fan of the man and his work, the coyote and his work. It's the most wily coyote campaign I think I've ever seen in my life. They've just never had it. But again, those folks never having it doesn't mean that they're not going to get it. The smartest and the safest thing that they could have done with Joe Biden was exactly what they did, and they had the best excuse on earth to do it. They kept him in his basement. He had softball and T-ball interviews too. And they had a machine in place that could make it believable if the guy won. Why? Well, look at the polls. And we're going to go back to what we talked about there. I've got some early poll data I want to share with you here in a little bit. The media kept up the illusion that it was neck and neck. It was a tie. It could be anybody's race the entire time because that gave them the wiggle room they needed with the cheat. And they cheated, man. Come on. Let's not kid around about it. I remember one time I got in a discussion. It really got me mad, too, with my brother about this. And his reasoning was, since none of the judges, and these, you know, these were judges that were all in the tank for the Democrats, none of the judges that these issues were brought before had interest in hearing them. Therefore, they have no merit. Therefore, cheating did not really occur. We're going to accept what the judges say. And if they say there's not enough merit to listen to it, then that's it. We're not going to entertain any thoughts that they might be corrupt judges, that there could be fixes in place. We're not going to do it. And the evidence has been overwhelmingly to the fact that that's exactly what it was. We had corrupt judges. 20,000 mules, go. You can get it online probably for free now. Dinesh D'Souza, 20,000 mules. Yeah, it happened. But this time, they're gonna have bigger problems. And one of the things, I don't know if you guys heard about this, a couple of ballot boxes, mail-in ballot boxes that you see out in the bigger cities, were set on fire. Now, I can guarantee you it was probably not conservatives who set these things on fire, which leaves what? That leaves the left. That leaves the Democrats. Why would they do that? Because their ballot harvesting operation isn't as effective or can't possibly be as effective as needed to overcome the early voting from Republicans for Trump supporters? Huh. Well, let's get on to that. Sundance over at Conservative Treehouse. We're not going to interpret this data too much other than to look at it and say, huh, this bodes a little bit better than it did last election. So, in terms of the in-person early vote, more than 38 million U.S. voters have gone in person to vote, according to the latest data from the University of Florida's Election Lab. Now, 4 years ago, that number was just over 35 million. Now, the main point, the takeaway here is, and I'm using my air fingers quote, 2024 in-person voting has already exceeded the 2020 result. Now, that's just the in-person early vote. Now, let's take a look at the total early vote. In 2020, 30% of total early voters, and this is in-person and mail-in, 30% were Republican. Almost 45% were Democrats. Now, this gap has narrowed, and it has narrowed substantially. So far, 36% of the total voters, and again, that's in-person and mail-in voters, are Republican, 36% Republican, 38% Democrats. A 15-point Democrat advantage has been dropped to 2%. Now, here's the one that you should really take notice of. And this has to do with young voters, and we're talking about the voters that are 18 to 25. Now, in 2020, 70% of young Americans in that demographic, 18 to 25, voted early. Currently, again, 70% in 2020. Currently, only 8% of those aged 18 to 25 are voting early. For some reason, there's been a massive drop in early voting, and that, again, in person or mail in the early voting amid those 18 to 25. Now, if this is, and it, this is Sunday, so if this carries into Tuesday, in other words, if they don't likewise vote on Election Day as they haven't voted on, you know, with the early voting, it could be that it is game over for Kamala. So while it's important, I really believe this, that we remain realistic and pragmatic, we can also, you know, use those things as a temper to our optimism. And we have to be optimistic. We have to accentuate the positive. That's part of this thing. And we've seen enough inspiration of that in the last couple of weeks. They do the garbage thing. Joe Biden does the garbage thing. I got something we're going to play on that. Some guy, I can't even remember his name, Hinchcliffe, Jason. Anyways, he's a comic. He's a roast comic. He's like Don Rickles, but probably doesn't have that skill set. So he's an insult comic, and he made pretty stupid comment, but it was a joke. Okay, so it's not for everybody, but the people lost their minds about it. Never mind the hypocrisy of he said that he referred to the island of Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage. At a Biden rally not too long ago over the summer, George Lopez is talking about how Mexicans steal. There's no difference, but these people decide to go ahead and zero in on this this roast comic at the Trump rally. And they don't even name him. They just say there's a joke. And they write it up in terms that leave it open to you who told the joke. Did Donald Trump tell the joke? Well, you know, they're always talking about how he's a racist. Maybe he told this joke. And that's why I'm not going to vote for him. But it's all pretty transparent. So Joe Biden calls. He says, you know, the only garbage he sees is Trump supporters. And then everybody loads up on him about that, and rightfully so. And they go, no, that's not what he meant. That's not what he's talking about. He meant something else. You guys took it out of context. He was talking about the supporters of the roast comic. He wasn't talking about Trump supporters. We can't say something like that. And it does. Well, we know Joe Biden, and we know the level of hatred that Joe Biden and those of his ilk, those who are cut from that same bolt of cloth, have for Donald Trump and Donald Trump supporters. He said exactly what he meant to say. We didn't take anything out of context. He said it so we could hear it. And he said it so we couldn't take it out of context. The context is clear. It's irrefutable. And it's not that he thought it because of this roast comic. That's what they think every day. This guy just gave them what they thought was justification to say it. That's all. So don't, and as far as the polling goes, you know, the trick was exposed last time, last election, 2020. That they oversampled. You know, a lot of these polling organizations are in the tank for Democrats. And so what they do is they'll survey 1,000 people. But maybe 2/3 of those people are going to be Democrats or undecided. Whatever they need to shape the poll the way they want it to go. So there's not a whole lot of objectivity. There's not a whole lot of impartiality here. These guys know how to massage this stuff. Now, there are some legitimate ones out there. But, and anybody telling you that this thing is neck and neck, don't pay a whole lot of attention to them either. I don't think it is. And I also think that, again, if Donald Trump wins, if we are to triumph in this, everybody's got to vote. It's going to have to be on a level that their cheating cannot overcome. That's the only way this is going to happen. In a level that their cheating cannot circumvent what's happening.
Think about all they've done to Donald Trump. First it was hoaxes, witch hunts, and impeachments. Then it was FBI raids, courtrooms, and mugshots. Finally, it was bullets in a Pennsylvania field. And after all that, this man stood up with blood draining down his face, pumped his fists in the air, and told us to fight. Fight. Fight.
America's future will be bigger, better, bolder, brighter, happier, stronger, freer, greater, and more united than ever before. And we will make America great again.
We know what they think of us.
The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
So if Donald Trump can get through all of that, we can get out to vote.
And if there are any of you, if there are any of you that are out there right now that think all we have to do is get Donald Trump back in the White House and everything's going to be great. No, I really don't think that's going to be the case. And we can't lull ourselves into some false sense of security that that's all it's going to take. Once we get to the White House, once Donald Trump is put back into the White House after he wins this election, if he wins, we're going to have to back him up. We're going to have to back his play. We can't just go, well, I voted, my job's done. Probably not. Because these guys are going to push back, man. Be prepared for them to not certify the election. Be ready for that. Washington, D.C., I read the other day, Thursday or Friday, has already started to board up buildings because of the anticipated violence. Now, let's stop and look at that. The anticipated violence. Where, prithee, do you think the anticipated violence is going to stem from? Is it going to be from the conservative, from the center, center-right section of this country? Probably not, because we all have jobs to go to. So what's that mean? They want you to think that it's going to be because conservatives are going to riot when Kamala Harris wins, because we're going to automatically and probably correctly assume that there was rampant cheating going on. Because why? Why would we think that? Well, because that's what happened last time. That's what happened in 2020. So who's going to tear up Washington, D.C.? Who's going to tear up these towns that have already been torn up by Black Lives Matter, by Occupy Wall Street, by Antifa? Who? Who's going to do this stuff? Well, you know who's going to do it. It's not going to be me and you. It's not going to be us. It's going to be those guys. Why? Because Donald Trump cheated to win the election. Because Donald Trump is Hitler. And what we're seeing, and this, don't be surprised, they're going to say, you know, what we're seeing now is very similar to when the president of Germany, Paul Hindenburg, appointed Hitler chancellor. That's what they're going to try and compare it to. Just like they tried to compare the Madison Square Garden event, the rally that he had, with a 1939 German-American Bund Association pro-Nazi rally that was held in another Madison Square Garden in another location. But they don't, you know, don't worry about that. They're trying, and, you know, they look like idiots for doing that. But they know that they look like idiots. They know that they're breaking rules. They know that they're lying. They know that they're going to be found out. They know that they're going to be caught, and they do it anyway. Do you know why? Because they don't care that they're going to be caught, because nothing's going to happen to them. What's going to happen to Lorne Michaels and NBC? What's going to happen? Seriously, what's going to happen to Lorne Michaels and NBC? They're going to pay some money, and they're going to pat themselves on the back for their impertinence, for their in-your-face-ism to the establishment. Even though they are the establishment, nothing's going to happen to these cats. What happened to Hillary Clinton? Nothing. What happened to Bill Clinton? Nothing. Nothing. Not a damn thing. What happened to all those people in politics and in entertainment and in the media that wound up going to Jeffrey Epstein's island? Nothing. And they know nothing's going to happen to them. So they behave this way with impertinence. They're not worried about a thing. Oh, gosh. But again, you know, getting Donald Trump into the Oval Office, getting him elected president, that's just the first stage. Then we've got to move to stage two. We've got to move on to phase two, which is pick up where we left off, make up for lost time, do what we can to weed out these embedded bad actors, this deep state, this swamp, Hydra, as I like to call it. And who's going to do that? Donald Trump can't do it. He can't just, you know, walk into the Department of Justice. And but there are going to be some people who are going to be sent back, and there are going to be a lot of people get their walking papers, the heads, thank God. And one of the things is that Donald Trump's transitional office, or that part of the campaign, isn't taking federal money. Now, why is that? Well, if they don't take federal money, then they're not indebted to accept also federal assistance in staffing. He's got his own people that are going to be making their own decisions about that, and they're going to be doing it outside of Washington, D.C. This is an important thing. This is an important part of this phase, because once he starts moving, because so many of these people, these evil people, these Hydra agents, serve at the whim of the president. They serve at the pleasure of the President of the United States. And if he doesn't want them there and he's got somebody else for that job, they're gone. They can't hang around. They can't barricade themselves in their office. They have been appointed, and then they are disappointed. They are removed. That appointment is done away with. And I think that that's... These are the positive steps that have to happen, and it's not going to happen overnight. This battle that we're engaged in, that we're just now turning the tide on, is going to take decades. You know, in the Battle of Midway, a vastly outnumbered American task force of three carriers, one of them barely a carrier, defeated four of the Japanese Imperial Navy's finest aircraft carriers and decimated their pilot roster, because all the experienced pilots, you know, a lot of them got taken out at Midway, and they were never able to recover from that blow. Although they fought on till August of 1945, when we dropped the bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But that was the death blow. That was a mortal wound to the Japanese. They never recovered, and we eventually defeated them. It's going to be like this. But these people are a domestic enemy. and they are going to be difficult to root out. But we'll be able to identify them based on the level of resistance they have to Trump policies and to Trump edicts. And it's going to take all of us. It's going to take every one of us, man. Every one of us. But we're up for the fight. Look what we've had to fight against for the last 8 years. I mean, he suffered attacks. Donald Trump suffered attacks from the time he came down that escalator to this very day. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we witnessed it. We saw how the whole thing, okay? Like we just played in that little ad there, that little voiceover that I gave you guys. Look at everything that's happened to him. That's his level of commitment. Didn't have to do any of this. He could be at Mar-a-Lago. He could be anywhere in the world, not worried about a thing. But he's chosen a different path at this stage in his life when he doesn't have to do anything that he doesn't damn feel like doing. What is he doing? He's taking verbal and legal slings and arrows and actual physical bullets. Oh, yeah. He's doing rallies left and right. They're talking about how easily fatigued he is. You know, and Kamala Harris says she was exhausted last week. He's doing 3 rallies a day, 3 different states a day. And he comes out, because I've watched, the same level of energy, the same level of enthusiasm, the same level of optimism, every single rally. From the one in the morning to the one in the afternoon to the one in the evening. And these people can't get enough of him. Absolutely cannot get enough of the guy. And it's not just D.C. businesses that are boarding up. Oh, no. Out in the Northwest, man, out in the great Northwest, in deep blue, deep, 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 oh, so deep blue, Portland, Oregon, they're boarding up in preparation for potential unrest ahead of Election Day. So, the Oregonian reports that banks, small businesses, and office buildings in downtown Portland can be seen with plywood secured over the doors and windows to protect properties from damage. Leftist and anarchist protesters notably rioted for nights on end after Donald Trump was elected in 2016 and terrorized the city in 2020 following the death of George Floyd. If your sports team loses, said a real estate developer in Oregon, do you go out and break windows? This guy, his name's Jordan Schnitzer. He owns the Pacific Center office tower, whatever that is, spent $20,000 boarding up 3 of his downtown buildings and calling the effort precautionary. So, you know, in this day and age, to see that this type of behavior in America is so commonplace is heartbreaking, he added. What kind of message are we sending to our young people? Exactly so. Exactly so. Similar reports coming out of the nation's capital where businesses close to the White House are boarding up in case violence breaks out. During a public safety meeting last week, Ward 2 Councilmember Brooke Pinto, no, I'm not making that up, Brooke Pinto, brought up the concern of residents and business owners to D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. We're already getting requests from businesses if they should board up. We're getting requests about people moving trash cans inside. According to D.C. News Now, McDonald's, the frame mender, and the entrance to 750 17th Street Northwest were almost completely boarded over by Thursday evening, although they were still open to the public. I think this is terrible. This has to be done because no one wants it. I don't think it should be necessary, but maybe because of the past, it is necessary. I understand that they have to do it, but I feel sorry that it has to be done, said Jerry Van Brokavon, who was visiting D.C. for the election. And that's the thing, you know, they understand why we have to do it, because this stuff has become so freaking commonplace. Look at what Black Lives Matter, go back to Occupy Wall Street, even before Trump. Go back to Occupy Wall Street, and as it segued into the Black Lives Matter or Antifa, look at the property damage that was done, billions upon billions of dollars to innocent people. So, I'm just curious. And it's a rhetorical question, about 85%. Who do you think cares about this country? Who do you think cares about this country and loves this country? Who are these people, these business owners, these real estate developers, these folks, who are they boarding their stores up against? Not me, not you. And I pray to God I'm wrong. But my guess is, even if Kamala Harris did win, and it's entirely possible she could, these guys would still, there'll still be riots. It won't be you and I rioting. It won't be because, you know, we're pissed off that we're now at the end of the world and the destruction of the country is almost complete. It won't be us. It'll be the BLM types. It'll be the Antifa types. And they'll probably try to blame it on conservatives somehow, maybe. But these people will do, and they'll do it because they're dissatisfied with certain policies that the Harris-Walls administration are going to enact. These people will write, if they think that the Democrats move in any way to support Israel or in any way to try and interrupt this war in Ukraine, they're going to go off. They're going to go completely off. It's not dead air. I'm just trying to digest all this. And then this is the kind of crap, you know, I was talking about earlier, being tired of all this. I'm tired of this stuff, too. I'm tired of the needless, wanton violence that the left commits, whether it's property violence, whether it's physical violence. It doesn't matter. I'm tired of it. There are so many people that have had this stuff happen to them that are completely undeserving of it. They're never going to be made whole. These injuries they will carry with them for the rest of their lives. Business owners, homeowners, neighborhoods, communities. Not to mention the people killed and all the people that were injured, all the innocent people that were injured. Guys, it wasn't conservatives doing this. It was not conservatives doing this. It was the left. Wasn't us, it was them. I know, and I preach about the anti-tribal thing all the time. But, you know, is it tribal when it's wrong or right? I don't know. And these people, you know, these are evil people. They didn't care who they hurt. They didn't care what property they damaged. They didn't care who they killed. They didn't care about any of that. All they cared about was power. All they cared about was terror and violence and chaos and mayhem and using those things, employing those tactics to secure their power base. It is as old as Adam and Eve and the apple. And why is it always guys like this? Because guys like this will do anything. They will sacrifice anything at the altar of power. It doesn't matter who it is. No matter how far back in time you want to go, most of the oppressive totalitarian, the oppressive totalitarian evil regimes, the Nazis, of course, the communists. Doesn't matter who it is. Go back through time. The Mongols. There were always groups of people who cared about nothing except what? Dominion over others, dominion over their territory, their lands, and the people who inhabited them. No different today. That's what the left does today. That's what the Nazis did. That's what the communists did. That's what the socialists do. That's what the left does. They don't care who gets hurt. They don't care what gets busted up. All they care about is if these actions furthered their claims for power, their needs for power. The ends justify the means. Okay? These guys don't care that police officers got killed. These guys don't care that churches were vandalized. These guys don't care that businesses and communities were laid waste to. They don't care about any of that at all. All they care about is in the end, after all that stuff is said and done with, that they maintain their power. Then then they can act shocked and appalled. They can sit up straight, clutch their pearls, and talk about how terrible this is and the steps that they're going to take to crack down on this sort of behavior and to make sure that it never happens again unless they have to unleash it. That's what that means. Tuesday, we have an opportunity to change all that. Tuesday, we have an opportunity to correct a lot, but not all, of the wrongs. We can right a number of wrongs on Tuesday. But then, that's when the battle pitches in. That's when we have to get after it. Getting him in the White House, getting Donald Trump elected president, yeah, that's mission one. That's mission critical. Nonetheless, after that's done, it's going to be even more important that he has our support, that we have his back, that we act when evil tries to raise its head. Nothing else to it but that. We live in interesting times, folks. ACP is heard here Sunday afternoons. Usually after 12, we've got a different, we're doing things a little different now. Mojo50 is still out there, but we're operating kind of independently. The website is just kind of like a page for the programs that are available there. I'm on all kinds of platforms. I'm on RSS.com. I'm on Amazon, Sony. Type in a conservative response. Oh, and yeah, Amazon Music. And you can find it. It's out there. We do a show on Thursdays through the Patriot Nation Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. You go to blogtalkradio.com, type in Patriot Nation. We're there Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, having said that, let me say this. The time is coming. The time is here. It's almost at hand. It's Sunday. Tomorrow we got to get our game face on. We have to be prepared. We have to be optimistic and unafraid. We have to be confident. It's serious, it really is. It's almost been such a cliche. Every election is the most important election you're ever going to see. And there were a couple, I think, that could lay claim to that. This one, definitely. Look at the ruination our country has suffered. Look at how our citizens have suffered. We can start on Tuesday to take the necessary steps to correct all of this. It's up to us to do it. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity to hang out with you here. It's always a treat. We're heard Sunday afternoons on the various platforms that I've told you about. Okay, we are on Spotify, Amazon Music, Samsung Podcasts, Podcast Index, Listen Notes, and the RSS.com community. Active on all of those. So that's where you can find it. And I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk about this. It is getting serious. It's genuinely getting serious. And, now's the time we've got to bear down on it. But that's all the time we have today. We will be back next Sunday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. You guys take good care of yourselves. We'll see you then.
These are the kind of guys you like to smack in the ass.
Oh, get on him. I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia. Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. I had more trouble to turn into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, that hound broke down and left us all stranded in downtown Birmingham. Well, right away up on me, I threw a train ticket right across Mississippi clean.